Hello, my friends. It's time for another episode of the Mental Corner Podcast, the show where I bring on guests from all different backgrounds to talk all the things mental health. I'm your host, Harry Poppin, here in another version of me recording an intro, super tired and not in the studio, and today I have the absolute pleasure of being joined by Michael Tremblay. Michael is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt who took his PhD in philosophy, where he studied Stoic ethics and education. He's also currently working on an app called Stoa Meditation, which combines mindfulness practice and Stoic theory. Michael was such a blast to have on, and this conversation was super interesting, you know, as someone who hasn't really heard of Stoicism, and still doesn't really know about it, but is continuing to learn about the philosophies of these ancient Greeks. This is such an interesting conversation, and you're really going to enjoy this one. And I want to thank Michael again for coming on and sharing his knowledge with us. Now, before we get into the episode today, guys, you know the drill. If you're listening, please like, comment, share, subscribe, give 5 stars if you're on that podcast platform. Share with someone who might want to hear this episode. It's a really great one, and I can't wait for you to listen. I'll talk to y'all very soon. Have a great rest of your day. Peace. We're good to go. Michael, what's going on, man? Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Harry. Glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here too, and I'm very excited about this conversation because it's something that I admittedly have zero knowledge on, so I'm very excited about that. But before we get into like Stoicism and what you learned about it, what got you into like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mixed martial arts, all of that stuff?
Yeah, so my primary sport is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now. But our family business, so my parents owned a gym, and part of that gym was a martial arts school. So that was something that I was like grew up in, was this athletic environment and then also this martial arts environment. But I was a really unathletic kid and really uninterested. I was much more interested in video games and anime and nerding out and stuff like this. But then in grade, so I was training, I was doing some martial arts, but then in grade 9, I did the high school wrestling team. I went on the high school wrestling team and I competed for the first time. And that first time that I competed, there was kind of like a mindset shift. And I really fell in love with sport. I think because in particular, in a kind of an individual sport, because up to that point, I'd done basketball, then soccer, which were team sports. And I felt in an individual sport, I didn't do very well, but I felt like there was total accountability. Like how well I did was an entire result of my effort. And that felt very empowering. It felt like there was an opportunity for me to improve myself if I was willing to commit. And kind of seeing that opportunity was really, really exciting. And so I committed myself more to, I wrestled in high school, but I really committed myself to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is another grappling art. Talk more about that if you want. And then I competed a lot in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu internationally in that. And then when I went to do my PhD, I ended up wrestling on the Queens wrestling team. So I got to be a varsity athlete as well and get that experience. And I came fifth at U Sports, so fifth at Canadian University Nationals in wrestling as well, which was a great experience. I think the varsity experience was really enjoyable too. But yeah, so that's it. Grew up in it, didn't really like it, but then competition kind of had that mindset shift for me, and I fell in love with it and really pursued it more.
Yeah, how much later did you get introduced to jiu-jitsu from wrestling, or was it jiu-jitsu before wrestling?
Yeah, so I started in jiu-jitsu. So the family business was jiu-jitsu. Like a bit of mixed martial arts, a bit of striking, that kind of stuff, but really primarily jiu-jitsu. And then wrestling was kind of like complementary. It was kind of this cross training. And then I committed to the jiu-jitsu and then got to explore that wrestling again in grad school.
Now for people listening who don't know what jiu-jitsu is, like what kind of martial art is it? Like I do Muay Thai, and like an hour before our practice starts, they do jiu-jitsu. And I walked in, I was like, what are they, like, what is it? It looks like something that you and your younger brother did when you were like little kids trying to wrestle each other.
Yeah, I mean, you were trying to, probably very poor jiu-jitsu, but trying to. So quick martial arts 101, you got grappling and you got striking. Those are the two types. So every martial art falls into one of those two categories, except mixed martial arts, which has both. And it's called mixed martial arts because it has both. Striking is where you're trying to hit each other, punch the person in the face, make them stop moving. It's pretty basic. It's pretty intuitive. Boxing, Muay Thai, Taekwondo, Karate. Grappling is you're trying to control the person positionally. You're trying to grapple with them, hold them down, pin them, submit them. That's wrestling, judo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Brazilian jiu-jitsu in particular is unique because it's the least restrictive grappling art. So it allows the most things. So if you think about boxing, boxing is a great art, but it's restrictive. I can only punch, right? I can't kick, I can't knee. Muay Thai is very unrestrictive. I'm allowed to elbow, knee, kick. I can do everything. And so wrestling, great sport, but you can't do any submissions. I can't choke people, can't armbar them. It's restrictive, it's limited. Brazilian jiu-jitsu is unrestricted. You can leg lock people, you can choke them, you can do the most amount of things to people. And what's particularly exciting about Brazilian jiu-jitsu and most grappling sports is that it's very technical. So there's kind of, there's not really any body type that excels, right? So in other sports, you know, I always had this great fear, like, what if I fell in love with basketball and then I'm 5'10", you know? So what do you do? What happens if you love basketball when you're in grade six, then you end up being 5'10"? It's like, what are you supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
But grappling, it's like, because it's a weight class sport, you can really succeed at any size, and people of entirely different sizes are able to, and like body types are able to excel because it's very technique oriented and there's techniques that work for every kind of body type.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I found because I was a varsity swimmer and like there wasn't a body type, but there also kind of was. It was like, yeah, you need to look a certain way. And I did not look that way. So getting into Muay Thai where it was weight classes and finding people that actually looked like my body type that I could compete with, that was an awesome part of it.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I don't know anything about swimming, so bear with me, but like, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of successful swimmers of different sizes, but people still talk about Michael Phelps's feet. They talk about, you know, his shoulder mobility. He's quite tall, things like this, right? Like there's going to be, because what you're doing is the same thing, you're trying to move through a body of water as quickly and efficiently as possible. There's going to be, if not one, then only a couple human shapes that do that best, right? But in something like grappling or martial arts in general, because there's a lot of different things you can do, there's a lot of different bodies that are able to effectively do those things, right?
Right, absolutely. Now, I did wrestling in high school for maybe 2 weeks, and every time I mentioned I wrestled, actual wrestlers just roll their eyes. They're like, that doesn't count. But for you, when you before like a wrestling match or a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competition or anything like that, what's the mental process that you go through before you, you know, ultimately accept like, hey, I'm going into a ring and I'm going to try to submit this dude?
Yeah, and I've done mixed martial arts as well, so I had. Four amateur MMA fights and one pro MMA fight. And mixed martial arts, for those that don't know, I mean, that's like UFC, right? That's like, you hit the person, you can, I mean, I have this seven stitches in my head here from getting kneed in the face. And so that's the same kind of thing. And then that's, I would say, is even like a level above from the grappling, because there's these physical consequences beyond just ego and things like that. And we'll get into this if we talk about stoicism, but really what my process is to focus on the things that are in my control, right? That's a big tenet, a big key part of stoicism, is this focusing on the things that are up to you and up to you in the moment, right? So how you dieted, how you prepared, whether or not you were disciplined or, you know, kind of bad in your discipline, that was up to you 6 weeks ago, a week ago, yesterday. In this moment now, what's up to you is the decisions you make in the moment, right? So what techniques I'm going to go for, when I'm going to expend energy, how hard I'm going to try. Those are the things that are up to me. And that's the things that I try to focus on, both for a performance reason. I think when you focus on those things, because those are the things that determine the output of the match, it helps your performance when you do, and for emotional reasons. When I'm thinking in the moment, I'm not getting upset, right? Because all I'm doing is kind of responding and reacting to information, right? So, oh, the ref made a really bad call. Well, that's information that I then take in and do a different output with, right? But when you think about other things, you start thinking about, well, you know, what's the reputation of this person I'm going up against? How important is this match? Who's watching? What are they thinking about me? What does this mean for how good I am and my value as a person? right? When you allow your focus to start to drift into those other areas, that's when you allow anxiety, nerves, you know, anger, sadness, and, you know, the opposites, this kind of like pride, being a poor winner, these other things that end up leading to those negative emotions later. So really focusing on, yeah, trying to get that attention to what's up to me. And that's not an easy process, right? That's like a skill set. It's like trying to run at a certain pace or trying to maintain focus on anything else. That's a skill that has to be developed. But just, again, trying to get it there, trying to pull it back. That's the process for me.
Yeah, definitely. So let's get into that process. When was the first time that you were introduced to Stoicism? Like, it was in university, right?
Yeah. So, for those that don't have the background, so Stoicism is an ancient Greek philosophy. And these philosophies in ancient Greece, they were like ways of life. They were these ideas about how to live, right? You think about it like pre-Christianity. These were ways of kind of formulating yourself, deciding what a good person was, deciding how you should act. So there's a lot of those. Stoicism is one of them. And when I was in university, I was taking philosophy. I was really enjoying it. And I took a philosophy course on ancient Greek philosophy. And we had to read a bit of Epictetus, who's my favorite Stoic. And it was one of those moments where you kind of, you know, I'm supposed to read a chapter and I end up reading the whole book, you know, because you just like, there's this spark, you just fall in love with it. And really, it seemed to me like he was articulating a lot of things that I had thought, but hadn't been able to put into words. He was making sense of kind of intuitions I had. And that was my discovery of Stoicism. And it was really kind of it was life changing, but it was, I wouldn't say it pulled me off the path I was on. It added sense to the path I was already on. It helped me make sense of what I was already trying to do. And the big idea with Stoicism, and a lot of my research, we'll get into this, is about Stoicism and sport and these kind of questions. But the big idea with Stoicism is that what matters most is your character. Your character is the choices you make, you know, how you act, the decisions, the way you deal with the circumstances you have. And so a lot of our suffering, a lot of our anxiety, a lot of our mistakes come from valuing or focusing on these things that aren't our character. And as it happens, these things that aren't our character are the things that are outside of our control as well, right? These things that are not up to us. And so if you take this to an athletic example, you know, people talk about these ideas, but in Stoicism, you get this kind of constructed school, this really robust way of thinking about it. But in an athletic example, you know, what's up to you is how well you perform, how hard you try, given your talent, your ability going into the competition. Like that's what's up to you, is to perform the best with the tools you have in the moment. Whether or not you win, unless you're literally world champion, unless you're literally the best person in the world, any competition either of us have ever won has been because the person better than us hasn't registered, right? Yeah. Even if we are the best person, anything we ever won is because, you know, we didn't trip, we didn't get sick the day before, right? The outcome is always context dependent, circumstances dependent. And so A, we shouldn't focus on that because that's a really scary, anxiety inducing thing to focus on. But B, is at the end of the day, it's also not really what matters, right? What matters for sport is it's a mechanism, in my opinion, what matters with sport, it's a mechanism of developing character, right? It's a mechanism of we're intentionally putting ourselves in hard positions because we like the kind of people that we become when we put ourselves in hard positions. That's the way I look at competition. And so when if you can keep that mindset, really lowers the stakes. It really makes you question why should I be getting upset if I don't win? Because it's not really the function. It's not really the point. I took that, a step further than you asked, but that's kind of the way Stoicism imbues into sport.
No, I love that. And honestly, like the as you're talking, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, man, swimmers could really benefit from this, because in swimming, there's an added layer where it's very, there's times, like results that you get or qualifying times, standards, and you almost put your value, not as just an athlete, but as a person, into those times. And it just adds a layer of, before the race, you're full of anxiety. Like, if I don't make this time, I'm a loser, or I'm a terrible swimmer, or this is all a waste of time. It's just this added pressure that I feel like this study would or this practice would just eliminate.
Yeah, and there's this idea with, so with jiu-jitsu, it can be very socially oriented because, or wrestling, because you're going up against one other person, and that person is like, you know, very, they're kind of dominating you in a sense if you lose, right? Like you're mm-hmm. doing jiu-jitsu, they're like, do you give up? Because if you don't give up, I will kill you, right? They're putting you in a choke or something. It's this very kind of, I want to say like prehistoric, but it's very like an innate part of human experience when you go and you fight somebody. So there's that real kind of social aspect you have to confront about, like, am I a better person than this person? You have to kind of question that. But I think a better part, a good side of jiu-jitsu is it's also kind of artistic, right? You get into this moment of flow, you get into this moment of I'm doing my techniques, they're doing their techniques. Maybe I win, maybe I lose, but there's not like this objective metric, right? Track, swimming, weightlifting, as you said, there's this number, and it's like, I'm worse than I was a year ago, can be like very objectively measured in swimming. And yeah, I think that's a difficult psychological thing to confront. I have empathy for that.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I used to be an idiot about it. I would like look at, I would look at splits and be like, oh, that one split in that one race was slower than one like a year ago. Like what am I doing wrong? It's just like, you go crazy overthinking stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I used to look into opponents a lot more than I do now. Like you used to be like, you look into everything they did, where they came from, where they were training, you find their Instagram, you find their Facebook, you're watching fights online. And again, it's this way of immersing yourself in something that's not you, right? Immersing yourself in something that's not up to you to try to get control, to try to feel in control, like I understand what's going on. But you can't get control that way, right? Because it's just not obtainable. No amount of information you have that can let you know what the other person's going to do or how the day is going to go. So that was a big thing for me. And then also, yeah, I mean, this is something that you hit on, and I think everybody experiences an athlete, just this kind of social conception. I mean, I would find myself getting upset, you know, getting angry or getting really sad. And, you know, you have to kind of question why. And it's like, well, because I'm putting a lot of my value as a human being in this athletic result, right? And so I should be upset if a bad thing happened. You know, I lost, and I view that as a failure, and that is a bad thing. So it's natural to get upset. And it's only by kind of questioning those values and kind of relooking at that, can you get over that hump? But yeah, I have a lot of empathy for your experience digging into that stuff.
Yeah, man. But yeah, it's just this whole added stress. But on that topic, like when you started studying Stoicism, when did you start to realize that you were implementing it into your wrestling and martial arts? Like, did you notice a change in how you approached things?
Yeah, I think it kind of happened slowly. I don't know if there's a direct moment. I mean, one thing with my coach in martial arts is he was always really good with talking about this idea of the mental game, right? So we would talk about this idea of there being four quadrants, which is, you have physical fitness and physical technique, which are pretty self-intuitive, like pretty intuitive. And then you have mental technique, which is, you know, in a swim, maybe I should just stick to grappling because I'm gonna make a mistake, but you know, it's like how, when do I sprint? Like how fast do I go? When do I exert energy? You know, on what criteria do I change my game plan? Like if I'm losing by a certain amount, do I change? I'm just guessing. And then you have kind of mental fitness, which is your capacity to deal with stress, your capacity to deal with anxiety, your capacity to perform to the best of your ability psychologically. So that was something we always prioritized and something we always thought about. That's one of the first things I do when I talk to athletes is I think, you know, your mental fitness, the first step is not fixing that. The first step is diagnosis, right? When you take somebody in physically, first thing you do is you do a fitness test, right? And you evaluate. And so if you haven't been thinking about the way you respond to stress and the way that manifests, the step isn't make me feel better. The step isn't make me tougher. The step is, well, what's going on and why is it going on? Mm-hmm. Right. So this kind of evaluation. And we were always pretty good at that. I was always kind of thinking about the mental side, about like, why am I responding this way? But what Stoicism gave me was it gave me a really secure set of tools. And I think another thing about Stoicism, and we can go into this as deeper as little as you want, but it changed the way I view life, right? Like, so you can take these things, you can take philosophy, you can take these mentalities as like life hacks, right? Like, I want to be a good swimmer, and this is like a life hack that helps me be a better swimmer. But at the end of the day, that's a facade. It's like a lie you're telling yourself so you can perform better in the moment. It's not something you've internalized and really believe, right? If you just say, well, it really, really matters whether or not I win, my entire life depends on that. But if I pretend like it doesn't matter, I'll do better in the moment. That's a very kind of a weak facade that will crack in high enough pressure situations. What Stoicism really did is it genuinely changed the way I look at life. Like, I really value character development. I changed my relationship with sport. So not just didn't just change my relationship with the way I prepare for matches. It made me view it, again, as I talked about before, as a mechanism for self-improvement and as a mechanism for character development, and something that I'm doing on purpose. I don't have to be an athlete. I'm choosing to be an athlete because I think it brings greater benefits to my character than not being an athlete. That's not just a tool, that's a perspective change. That's an entire dynamic, the way that you relate to your life changes, right? And I don't know if there was a specific moment that happened, but certainly after a couple of years of studying Stoicism, internalizing it, and believing that it was right and wanting to live in accordance with it, right?
Right, yeah. Were there any specific like quotes or anything, like any practices or anything in Stoicism? You can tell that my knowledge of this is so limited, but was there anything that like in particular stood out to you when looking at like life and sport and character?
Yeah, so, I mean, one thing that I love about Stoicism is they make a lot of metaphors and a lot of comparisons between athletes and philosophers. And that's one of the things is like, when you do a lot of philosophy, there's not a lot of philosophers like sports. So there's not a lot of discussion of sport in philosophy, but Stoicism was one of those things that saw those things as the same, right? And it saw character as something that had to be developed through intentional training and intentional practice. And the Stoics were like, look, the athletes already got that figured out, right? Like, just do what they're doing and apply it to being kinder, braver, you know, a more just person. Like, take that idea of like incremental work and incremental improvement and, you know, effort and focus and dedication that the athletes are doing, and pull that over to the other spots of your life. So I really like them as people that they recognize kind of the value of sport in other domains. And that was something I appreciated. Another thing they talk about is, again, they a lot of the times they're talking about athletes as an example, right? They're talking about good athletes or athletes that have this right mentality. So one of my favorite parts of Stoicism is when what you want is not a certain outcome, when what you want is to act well, is to be a good person, then every situation is just a different opportunity. Every situation is an opportunity for you to perform well, right? And in the athletic example, when what you want to do is rise to the challenge, what you want to do is play the best you can play in the moment, difficult opponents, challenges, circumstances you didn't expect, those become opportunities. So this reconceptualization of difficulties and hardships as opportunities was something that I really took to and really enjoyed. And it was a mindset shift. And Epictetus, the Stoic that I talk about or like the most, you know, he was alive around 100 AD. He was a slave. And when he gained his freedom, he went and opened up a school of philosophy. So he's like, the writings we have from talking to his students, like, he's like a coach, right? So I really love that his way of teaching. But one thing he talks about is he says, like, you know, if you take a good wrestler, if a good wrestler entered the wrestling room and everybody was weaker than them, they'd be disappointed. They go to their coach and say, hey, you know, I need a challenging person to train with, right? And he's like, you should look at your life the same way, right? Like, if your life's going easy, you should be a little bit disappointed because you go, hey, I need hardships to test myself. I need hardships to evaluate, right, where I can improve and what I can get better at. So that was another thing that I really took with me. So this reconceptualization of difficulties as opportunities, this focusing on character, those are two things. I think a third thing that I really took was this idea of kind of acceptance, and not like a radical acceptance, but an acceptance that certain things are going to be hard and being okay with that. Epictetus has this passage about the Olympic athlete where he says, look, if you want to be an Olympic athlete, you're going to have to train every day. You're going to have to sweat in the heat. You're going to get covered in dirt. You're going to have to not eat cake, you know, not eat your cheat meals. And he's like, and after all that, you're going to go to competition. You're going to like sprain your joints. You know, you're going to get tired. You're going to get beaten up. And at the end of the day, you might even lose. You might do all that and not even win the Olympics. And he's like, only accept that. Only choose to be an Olympic athlete if you're okay with that. Otherwise, you're pretending this is something it's not. And that was a really big insight for me too, is this kind of consistency was, you know, you don't get to have your cake and eat it too. If you're going to do difficult things, they're going to be difficult, and accept that. And this is not, to be fair, this is not advocating not checking in when you're having a hard time, not plugging in when you're struggling. This is not the same thing. What this is kind of, I think, not expecting that struggle to not be there. So being surprised when it happens, right? So in many ways that actually fits in with a lot of mental health advocacy, which is like being aware that there's going to be problems and accepting that and not kind of ignoring that or being surprised when that happens. Yeah, so I think that's kind of three ideas that impacted my way of relating to sport from Stoicism.
Right. Oh man, it's all such good stuff. Why do you think that, like, because everything you're saying just seems like the right way to approach it, the right way to think about it, and like why is it not as mainstream as it probably should be?
Yeah, it's becoming more mainstream now. I mean, Stoicism is much more popular than it ever was. And maybe not ever was. It was really popular back in Rome, but as popular as it's been recently. And I think what people do is, I think people don't always live intentionally. And when they do live intentionally, they don't really get down to this bedrock. So like Greek philosophy, one of these ways to get to your values, you know, is you'd be like a 5-year-old asking why all the time. So you'd be like, I'm doing this. Why? I'm doing, you know, so I can, you know, I'm going to this swim competition. Why? Oh, so I can win. Why? Oh, so I can get a scholarship. Why? So I can get into a good school. Kind of ask these questions again and again and again, and you'll get down to this kind of bedrock. What do you value? And I think that kind of work is really, really important. A, to say, what is it now? And B, what do you think it should be? And I think if people do this work, they'll come to a lot of the same conclusions that people came to all throughout history. There's only a couple of core schools or a couple of core ways of relating to life, Stoicism being one of them. But I think people, you know, they don't live intentionally. I mean, you can, to make an athletic metaphor, right? You can think about this like diet or anything else or weight training. You kind of just get into a habit of relating to the way that you practice or train or eat. And you have to kind of get down to first principles. And I think if you do that, there's a lot of appeal to Stoicism. But if you don't, you get caught up in social principles, social ideas. And those have a lot of, you know, what we learn from habit, what we learn from emulating other people is not always healthy. It's not always what's good for us. That's not always what we even think we should be doing once we reflect upon it.
Right. I mean, everything you're saying is like striking chords, because when I was in swimming, like I would say my only goal is this time. Or like to go this time. Okay, why? And I could never answer the why. It was just like, I have to, because if I don't, then I suck. And it was like, mm-hmm. It's just everything you're saying. Like it didn't seem like I was very, my focus and my goals weren't very aligned with what they should have been. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and by what they should have been, what do you mean?
I mean, like, based on this conversation, like, character and, like, you know what I mean? Like, at the time, yeah. It felt like they should have been that. But, like, looking back and doing the inner work right now in this very moment probably should have been different.
And I think that's very normal, too, right? Like, so part of Stoicism and part of this acceptance is also forgiveness, right? I mean, not that you need to be forgiven for, but like, you know, sometimes we look back and go, oh, I was a shitty person back then, or I did bad things. That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about, like, you know, having not an ideally healthy relationship with your sport. But even if we expanded out to worse things, part of that is this acceptance. And again, I find the physical analogy so grounding, because when people start thinking about character, or they start thinking about the mental, it gets really obscure, it gets really opaque. But if you just ground it in the physical, it makes a lot of sense, especially to athletes. So it's okay. You know, you were out of shape back then. Okay. You know, so now learn the habits and get in shape now, you know, fix it, right? Put the work in. It will be incremental. You'll make mistakes sometimes. You'll get out of shape sometimes, and then you'll get back in it, and it'll be a process that, as long as it's trending up, you're doing okay. And that's the thing is, like, yeah, you were, you know, having that poor mental preparation for me is no different than if you were training swimming in a club and, you know, the coach was really bad and nobody knew, because it was like, you know, it was some isolated area and you had bad technique. Okay. Well, now the job is to get that better technique once you learn that. Right. But it's very, very normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And now I wanted to kind of, go into like the mental health aspect and like how does stoicism, like, how can people use that and apply it to mental health?
Yeah, cool. Great. So one of the key features of stoicism, so I would say there's a couple of things. So there's like your life philosophy. So what you choose to truly value, that's what we were talking about before, this idea of valuing character, that's the stoic answer. But I think that is an important question that anybody should approach and think about just for their own life going well. And then there's this other part to stoicism. So stoics were like these psychological innovators. And they came up with what's called like a cognitive view of emotion, which is getting support in contemporary psychology. It was actually the foundation of cognitive behavioral therapy is stoicism, which is a contemporary effective form of therapy. And what the cognitive view of emotions is that, you know, your emotions, the way that you feel, is a result of what you believe and what you think, right? So if I think losing is a bad thing and I lose, I am going to be sad because right. I thought it was a bad thing. And I can change the story, right? So, okay, you lose that race by 2 seconds, you're sad, right? Okay, well, now you were racing against Michael Phelps, now you're happy. And it's like, what changed? It's like, well, what changed was like what you thought about the event. The event was the same. You lost by 2 seconds, you came second, or, you know, whatever. But what changed is the way that you thought about it, right? So it was this idea that our emotional lives are determined by the way that we relate to the world and what we think about the world. So what we should do is work on what CBT calls cognitive distortions, times when we think about the world incorrectly or unhealthily. B, the part that I was saying about what you choose to value, choose, like, think deeply about the way that you, what you actually believe about the world, what you actually believe matters, what you actually believe is important. And then I think C, which is like another part that was very helpful for me as an athlete, is recognize that emotions are behaviors. They are, in a way, they're kind of, I don't want to say choices, because that makes it seem like it's your fault if you're struggling with your mental health, but they are reactions, they're responses, they're things that you are participating in beyond this like subconscious. So if I can take a step back, like coming from not a psychology background, coming from an athlete background, there's this view of like, well, your emotions are this kind of, it's this animal part of you, like shut them down, push them out, unless it's good. Oh, you're angry, you perform better when you're angry. Okay, well then access that. You know, it was this kind of this view of like, these emotions are this animal part of you that you just try to control. And stoicism takes this view that no, these are these things that you participate in. You build your emotional life when you build your intellectual life, when you build the way that you value the world and the way you think about the world. So you need to take accountability for them, and you need to take responsibility for those responses, and whether or not, if they're unhealthy, coming back and working on them and fixing them. Now, this is kind of I guess in mental health, and you're more of an expert than me, so I'd be interested in your perspective. There's kind of like you're sick, and there's kind of like you're looking on becoming as robust and strong as possible. And I think a lot of what I said has to do with being like robust and strong. This is not to say if you find yourself in kind of an unhealthy pattern of emotions, this is not to say, oh, it's your fault, or oh, you can immediately jump out of it. You can immediately change things and you're to blame if you can't. But it is to say, and I think good news, is that you're able to actually influence that pattern. You're able to get into that pattern, and through work in you know, therapy, or work in you know, just intentional reading, thinking, you know, listening to podcasts like this, you're able to start to turn that around, because it's not a thing you're fighting against. It's a thing you're participating with. It's a thing you're actively constructing and building your mental health and your mental emotional life. That was a lot of ideas, but happy to build into any of those or go deeper into any of those.
Yeah, no, that was great. But yeah, absolutely. Now, kind of building off of it, like how can someone who's maybe listening right now start to develop that kind of mentality where it's, you know, it, like, how can they build a mentality, or like build a coping strategy, I guess? I'm trying to find the words here.
Yeah. So one thing that stoicism, there's this quote, I want to attribute it to Viktor Frankl, who was a psychologist who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, but it's actually not by him. And I can't remember many people say it is, but I can't remember who actually said it. But it was this idea that between, you know, impression, impulse, and reaction, there's a freedom to choose. And in that space, in that time, is where all of kind of human freedom lies. And what is meant by that is that when there's animals are input output, right? You do something to an animal, they have a certain response. You can train an animal so the output is different, but it's still going to be input output. Humans alone have this ability to reflect, to think about our thinking, right? And I'm going somewhere with this. I'll pull it back. But the idea is that there's this space, there's this gap, right? And so I think the first thing to do when you want to start building kind of a stoic practice or kind of mental health practice is, like I said, is evaluation. So, you know, when something happens that makes you upset, it makes you frustrated, the first thing to do is to say, okay, well, that thing has happened, and to kind of pause and to not judge it, and to just observe the situation, and to kind of to say, oh, you know, I don't have to have an opinion on this. I don't have to have a reaction to this, and kind of to take that pause and evaluate what happens in that pause, evaluate what kind of thinking, what kind of result you come to that leads to that output, right? So I'll ground it. You go into a tournament, you're starting to get nervous. You know, I think the first thing to do is to identify, well, I'm starting to get nervous, and then to identify, well, what's happening? Okay, there's a tournament coming up. There's an event coming up. Why am I getting nervous? Well, there's going to be people there. There's going to be, you know, I've put a lot of pressure on myself. Begin this kind of evaluation phase and try to extend. You might still end up getting nervous. You might still end up getting angry, getting sad, but try to extend that process. Make that space as long as possible where you have that freedom to choose, that kind of evaluation phase. Because if you don't have that, then you're living on autopilot, right? You're living on input output. And when you're doing that, it's very hard to change these patterns. It's very hard to kind of to start to feel like you have the ability to change, because you don't, because there's no space, there's no time to start to question and to evaluate. So I think the first thing is to make that space. I think the second thing is to work on your focus, to work on your attention, like a skill set. So, you know, attention is a skill. If you sit down and try to read a boring book, some people can read it longer than others. Some people have better attentions than others. Focus. And what focus is focus is the ability. It's not so much the ability to retain, to look at the thing you're looking at. It's the ability to stop the other things from coming in view. Right? So if I'm focusing on reading a boring book, it's not my ability to look at to read the book. It's my ability to not go to my phone. It's my ability to not go to Netflix. It's the ability to stop other things from coming into that cone of attention. I use the metaphor of like, you know, your mind is, has the, your mind's eye has this like stage, right? And it's like, what's on stage? So work on training that, right? If you're getting nervous, you're getting anxious, if you're being upset, what's getting on stage, what's getting in focus are things that are, you know, they're things that are not up to you. They're things that are outside of your control. They're these external factors. And so in terms of performance specifically, work on keeping that attention to as little as possible and as much as possible on just your responses, your reactions, what you can do in the moment. And that's the thing that just needs to be built up over time. And you will fail like anything else, but you'll get better at it slowly. Yeah. So those were two points. One was, you know, evaluating your emotional responses and trying to create a space between event and response and feeling the freedom in that space and feeling the power you have to choose in that space. And the other is working on attention and focus. And both of these have to do with mental focus. They both have to do with kind of a mental attention that we're giving to the situation. And again, pulling it back to the athletic example, the ideal Stoic is the person that hits a flow state, who's able to do that well without even focusing on it. And you, again, you think of it like an athletic example. If I'm playing basketball, I suck at basketball. I have to think about dribbling, right? Well, the good people don't have to think about dribbling, but they have to think about their three-point shot. Well, the people better than them don't think about the physical stuff, but they have to think about the playmaking. And the ideal is to get into a flow in every way. But that's not going to happen without practice, practice, practice. Yeah, so those are some Stoic ideas.
Right. The flow state thing is so interesting, right? Because when it's something that you're not practicing or something that you aren't involved in, like basketball, where you're dribbling and everything, it's almost hard to comprehend how someone can function like that, where it's like mm-hmm. all these different parts are so aligned and it's like second nature to them. Mm-hmm. It's just so fascinating.
And I guess to take that a step further, that's why mental health can often seem very, mental health is a broad topic. Again, I want to say, like, I'm not talking about people who are, you know, there's different kind of degrees of situations here, right? And I'm not talking about like, you know, oh, if you're clinically depressed, you just need to get into a flow state, man, and then you'll be good. Like, I'm not saying anything like this, but I guess I'm referring to the kind of mental health that comes with kind of general resiliency from like day-to-day things that we take on. We want to be the kind of people that can withstand healthily as high a level of stress as possible, right? So right. It's like, how do we develop that capacity? And when you see that person in the flow state, your instinct when you see those great athletes is like, I cannot do that. They are built differently. And it's kind of like unlearning that idea, unlearning that kind of cop-out and being like, no, if I put in my 10,000 hours, I could get there. And when we apply that same thing to kind of this mental resilience, this mental focus, this mental, you know, acuity and ability to put up with stress, it's the same kind of thing. You see a rock star on stage and you're like, how the hell are they performing, you know, in front of 10,000 people and they're not like stressed or anxious? Well, some of them probably are, but other ones, you know, it's, you're putting in the time, you're performing, you're getting used to that flow state more and more, but it just takes time. They're not different, right?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I'm wondering what your opinion is on this in terms of like being stoic and everything, or I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. Stoic.
Stoic.
Thank you. But yeah. There was this one, actually it's happened a couple times and I'm going back to basketball because I'm a big fan and you brought basketball up and it lit.
Yeah, no, me on. Too. That's the sport that I'm a fan of that I don't do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm 5'9", so I'm a little under yeah. you. I can't do any of that. But, when they're doing like the post game interview and the reporters are like asking questions that are, you know, designed to trigger emotion and trigger mm-hmm. like a certain response. And they just answer with like, yeah, it was cool. I just did this. I just did that. It's almost like the response from the public is, why aren't you reacting more? And it's like, you're a weirdo kind of for not.
Totally. Well, I think of the Kawhi Leonard. So for this is, you know, we're Canadians for the international audience here. So Toronto won the title in 2009, I think it was, in the NBA. And it was the conference finals. They were against Milwaukee and they were down 0-2. And the reporter asked Kawhi Leonard, you know, where do you go from here? And he goes, Like, I go on the plane to Toronto for game three. Like, and it's this hilarious response. Exactly what you're talking about, right? Like, where do you go from here? Like, I have no idea where I go. My life is ruined. Like, they're wanting this kind of response, or the confident response. Like, where I go from here is I go back and I crush them. And, you know, but none of that. It's just like a very kind of literal response, right? And that's somebody whose focus is in the right spot, right? Their focus is, where do I go? I go to the next game and I play the best I can play. And I think a lot of that is what we want out of sports. Is sports has this dual role, right? As the athlete, the sport is this, either as a professional, it's a method of making money, or as a practitioner, it is a method of self-improvement. But as an audience, the sports take on this, like, they're kind of like soap operas, right? They're these stories, they're these narratives that we participate in. Whether or not that's like, oh, my country beat your country in the Olympics, so my country is better than your country. It's like a story, right? Or my city beat your city, even though my city has nobody, you know, nobody that was born in Toronto plays on the team.
Yeah.
I'm still going to take all this pride in it. Right. And that's fine. Like, I like playing, I like engaging in those the same way I like watching Marvel movies. Like, I like storylines. It's okay as a human being to like those. But one thing we can do as an athlete is we can get caught up in those storylines, and we can start telling those storylines about ourselves, about other people. And I think that's a big, big mistake. Because I don't think that's what sport should be about. And that's when you end up ruining yourself for sport, because you're in pursuit of this kind of this grand narrative. And you know, at the end of the day, that only pays off for a select few people. And I also just think it's wrong. I also just think it's like not the right way to think about it. It's not, you're not the hero in a story. You're a person, you know, participating in a craft. And I think that's a much healthier way to relate to it.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, the biggest thing when I was an athlete in swimming was everyone was focused on that grand finale, like that final race they were going to have, or that final swim meet, because they would look at like the Michael Phelpses of the world and like all the other swim Olympians who finished off on such a high note, like a gold medal or like a world record. And everyone was like, I need to have that grand finale. And then you have your finale, and then that expectation that you had just makes the whole experience like tainted almost, because you're like, well, I didn't win, or I didn't drop the time I wanted. And it almost ruins the whole thing. It makes you leave on a sour note, which is what happened to me anyway.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and that's the Stoic idea, right? About that cognitive view of emotions. You're disappointed because you think something bad happened. You're disappointed because you put value in something, having a grand finale, and you didn't get the grand finale. People get upset when things they want don't happen, right? And but then you need to interrogate that story. You need to really look at that story. And yeah, I mean, I think that's it's a silly thing for a couple of reasons. A, because I don't think it's what's important, but B, because as you said, you know, one person every 4 years gets to have it, or a couple of people in swimming, because there's a lot of events. Just not a great way to live your life, not a really intelligent way to structure your life. Which is not to say you can't have pride, right? It's not to say you can't be like happy in what you've done. But if you say, I can only be happy in what I've done if I medal at nationals my last year or something, or you set this goal, right? Or I make it to nationals, or I break this PB I set for yourself, you change your goal. That's just not true, right? It's a lie. And that's this idea of cognitive distortions I was talking about earlier. It's just not a reality. And when you've attached yourself to something that is not true, that makes you feel bad, you should probably do some work to unattach yourself to that, right? Right. It's like, it's not yielding any benefits here.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Now on that note, I guess my last question for you, Michael, is because athletes listen to this, hopefully. And if you are an athlete that listens to the show and want to become more like a Stoic and like just approach your sport or your competition in a different way, because the way you're approaching it is, like we've mentioned, not very effective or just defeats the purpose of sport in general. Like, where should they get started on all of this?
Yeah. So I have a couple articles about Stoicism in sport. I also have an app called Stoa, which has like a bunch of theory about Stoicism, but then a bunch of meditations and exercises for people that want to get practice. I mean, that's something that athletes really value, right? Is this ability to be like, okay, I've read about it, but like, I want to actually practice it. So again, that's Stoa, which is my app. People can also message me and reach out to me, and I'm happy to chat with it, especially athletes. But other than that, what I would recommend is, you know, just going to the source if you're interested in it. Just going to the classics, right? So going to Epictetus, Marcus Aurelius, Seneca, picking up one of these famous people, and reading some of their work and seeing how it relates to you and if it engages with you. And then once you have that foundation, then you can start to think about it as it relates to your life and relates to sport for you.
I love it, man. And where can my listeners find all that stuff you were mentioning, like your app and your own?
Yeah, so the app's just on iTunes, Google Play. Again, called Stoa, Stoic Meditation. And then I have Twitter, I have Instagram, and I have a website. And always happy, I respond to people. Always happy to chat with anybody who reaches out there.
I love it, man. I'll put those links down below. Do you have any competitions coming up?
Oh, my sister is actually competing in the world championship tomorrow. So that's like a competition by proxy. I'll be watching that. But yeah, just getting back into competition after COVID. I just won the Ontario Open a couple weeks ago.
Nice.
But looking for something in the future. No, nothing specific coming up, but I'll be getting more into it since jiu-jitsu is so close contact. It was not something we could do very easily with COVID. So I'm glad to be getting back into it.
Right. No, I love it, man. Best of luck, and we'll be keeping updated. Thank you so much for joining, Michael. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks, Harry. Had a great time.
And to all my viewers, I will see you guys next time.